Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
That open just got the Zoe Smith seal of approval. She just listened to it through my headphones. A good Zoe.
Oh, there
on a scale of 1 to 10, what was that? Like a 9. Okay. Wow. All right. Couldn't say 10.
Well, she said too much voiceover guy, not enough me.
Oh, yeah, well, we're a lot of voiceover guy. But they did get Lincoln Heights in there for you, buddy.
No, that's true.
You'd like that.
No, that's good. It gave me a specific place to hang out.
The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon live from the Fox Sports Radio studios. We got an amazing story from Eric Dickerson coming your way in about 20 minutes, joining us earlier tonight. And look, you know, when Eric Dickerson joins us, coaches get fired, the NFL changes. He's got a great story for us coming up in a few minutes. But tonight was a night for Joel Embiid. I really would have liked to see what he could do with more minutes. In 27 minutes tonight, he tied his career high with 50 points. He also had 12 rebounds and 3 blocks. He was 15 out of 17 from the free throw line. He only played 58 seconds in the fourth quarter because they were thumping the Magic. But 50 points in 27 minutes. And Joel Embiid, who is always a matter-of-fact guy, said, "My teammates just found me. And I did the rest." So they, well, just, I don't, I'm not saying, "Hey, my teammates did a great job. It was awesome." Hey, my teammates, did, but you know, I did this. Just so you know, I mean, I was the guy who did it.
Nothing worse than false modesty. You know, you had a great game, and the reporters are lined up to kiss your ass. This is not the time to be throwing laurel crowns at your teammates. You know, give them their and acknowledge that they gave you the ball, realizing you had the hot hand. But you do have to, at some point, say, "Look at me." Because, let's face it, have we talked about Joel Embiid in a while? Other than, "Hey, Ben, where you at? Are you coming back or what?" That's the only time we've referenced Joel Embiid this entire season to date. Was all related to you're wasting a year of his life with Ben Simmons on the sidelines.
You know who the most pissed off guy in the world is right now?
Who's that?
Mo Bamba, because he had 32 points and 7 threes, and because you had Joel Embiid go for 50, no one's talking about that.
You still lost by 13.
But I set a career high. Doesn't matter. Joel Embiid had 50.
No, it's a great game, and folks that look at the box score may go be inspired to buy a couple of Mo Bamba rookie cards, or maybe they'll go see the Orlando Magic when they come to a town near you. But beyond that, it doesn't matter.
You know, a funny thing before we get to Jim Harbaugh is that last year, Joel Embiid was the far and away front runner for MVP. Then he got hurt, and he was just out a little bit too long to be able to say, "Yeah, Joel Embiid is the MVP." The Sixers started off very poorly this year, but now here they come. They won 8 out of their last 10. They're only a game or two out of potentially second place in the East. And now you have Embiid doing this without Ben Simmons. So to think that maybe he's not going to get some MVP run before it's all said and done, oh, he might. If Philadelphia keeps climbing the East and it's all Ben and it's all Embiid and Ben Simmons can't get traded, nobody else comes in and Embiid is having this kind of year again, he's going to start getting that run for MVP. Watch out, Ja Morant. When you hold up that trophy, you're going to have to hold off Joel Embiid to win it all. Look out.
Got to keep winning if you're Memphis. Right, you want to win the title and win your MVP and get over. You can't lose to Milwaukee by 12. Although Memphis played again, right? That's the bigger point. Is
they play?
I think in order to pad things and to really get things over, they're actually playing a 164 game schedule.
They play more games than the Mets.
No days off. I mean, this is a barnstorming tour at this point, like the Globetrotters and Generals for all those years. Where are you playing tomorrow? Hartford. Night after that? Oh, we're all the way back in San Francisco. Yeah, we're on a red eye, and then we take the court at 2:15 tomorrow afternoon. That's the life. That's what it feels like for the Grizz. I mean, they've already played 47 games.
How many games you got? They're like a barnstorming team. We're just going to keep playing. No. We got Ja Morant.
But Ja Morant, I mean, you can't stop this guy. 39 minutes tonight, 33 points, 8 boards, and 14 assists. How about they lose by 12?
Yeah. So, again, big night for Joel Embiid. And right now, Frank Vogel watch. Lakers lead at 64-59 over the Pacers. So as long as this game continues to go this way, Frank Vogel should have his job at least one more day. Now, speaking of jobs, Bruce Feldman, college football insider extraordinaire. You know, we've been on the show here with us at Fox, everywhere. He's, you know, there's not many more trusted guys in all of college football than Bruce Feldman. Had a report earlier today that said that Jim Harbaugh would take the Raiders job if it was offered to him. He'd leave Michigan and take the Raiders job. This is something that's been rumored for a while since the semifinal game ended. They lost to Georgia. It's been, hey, I'll listen to the NFL again. And just to get exactly the pulse of the Wolverine fan base, when I said this to my wife, because, you know, Pam's been Michigan, you know, she went to Michigan, she's from there, there's nothing bigger for her than Michigan football. When I said, hey, Bruce Feldman's got this report that Harbaugh could go to the Raiders if they offer him the job, her reaction was, oh. Not, oh my God, we can't lose a guy that just won the Big Ten. We can't lose a guy that just got us to the playoff. It was, oh. Okay, that's been the relationship.
She just didn't want to argue with you.
No, I wasn't looking for anything other than, you know, what her reaction was, and it wasn't wow, it wasn't oh my God, it was a, oh okay, because that's kind of been the relationship that Michigan and the fan base and everybody else has had with Harbaugh. They've welcomed him back, but kind of at arm's length because he hasn't won enough, and part of that is why. This is more than just, hey, I want more money to stay at Michigan. The NFL seems to be his destination now. Part of it from the beginning is it may never get better than it is right now. I won the Big Ten finally. I beat Ohio State. We made it to the playoff. Is that really going to happen again? Was it a down year for Ohio State? Are they going to come back and kick our ass next year? You know, is J.J. McCarthy really going to be good? Are we going to be able to replace Hassan Haskins with Blake Corum? All these things. But this is about more than just Jim Harbaugh. Because if you would say, why would you leave now, when clearly Michigan, he's never had a better time than he's had at Michigan. College football is scaring coaches now. When you are looking at an ever-changing landscape, and just in the last 8 months, we've entered the era of the constant transfer portal and NIL. Can you stay relevant? Can you keep getting recruits in the transfer NIL era? And it's become more difficult for coaches who have done things a certain way for the majority of their careers. Harbaugh's always been a great recruiter. Going and sleeping at Quinn Nordine's house to get him to come kick at Michigan. Nobody cares if you come and sleep in my house. It doesn't matter. Hey, Harbaugh can come sleep in my house. What's Ryan Day going to get me? Oh, dude, I got a $1 million NIL deal all throughout Columbus. Oh, hey, Jim, thanks for coming to sleep in my house, but I got this going on, so sorry about that. It's an ever-changing landscape, and what Jim Harbaugh would do recruiting-wise, this takes away a big advantage of it. Coaches want to know, all right, can I be a king? Can I be a king here? Can I continue to be a king, and can I stay employed, and is this the place for me to do it? And you would think Michigan would have all the resources, all the reasons to want to do it. And we can do it here. Of course we can. We're Michigan. Well, as good as it's been for Michigan, they still have had a horrible losing streak against Ohio State till this year. They still have a tough time beating Michigan State. Harbaugh's finally won the Big Ten. Now, with the landscape of NILs and transfers, is this something he can navigate? Now, maybe he could, but it's really mentally daunting. You wouldn't think that Lincoln Riley would have had trouble. But they're going to give me all this to go to USC? I'm gone. You'd think Brian Kelly would have everything he wanted at Notre Dame, but no. Oh, there's academic requirements and NIL. I'm going to LSU. You would think that these guys could stay where they are and still be kings. But obviously at the top of this list, there's coaches who have said, I can go someplace else. I need to go someplace else. Lincoln Riley was taken by USC. We're going to put all this money in front of you, so you have to come. Okay, great. Brian Kelly was, hey, if you give me money, I'll go. I'll leave Notre Dame. Wait, why would you leave? Who leaves Notre Dame? Brian Kelly would for LSU. Who would do that? Brian Kelly would, because he's afraid, I can't stay relevant. I couldn't keep winning at Notre Dame, and I want to be able to keep coaching at a high level here in college football, so now I can jump to LSU. There's all these things going into why Jim Harbaugh and why college coaches get scared by college football. Now, they want to think they can do it, but they don't know, and they don't know in 6 months if the rules are going to change again. And here's Harbaugh, who's been navigating this for the past 7 years and finally gets to a point where he wins. Do I keep it going? Can I keep it going? What changes are going to happen? You know what? Time for me to go back to the NFL. I succeeded there. I came back to Michigan. I checked it off my bucket list. I beat Ohio State. I'm leaving on a high note. I can walk away. Everybody will love me. Now it's time for me to get back to the National Football League.
61-24 in his 85 games at Michigan. To your point, Ohio State, not that you're going to suddenly become a juggernaut over them, but yeah, they had their year and opt-outs and injuries and everything else, but you got them. Right? Does that mean that it's a one-and-done situation there? Nah, not necessarily. As for NIL, I mean, Harbaugh is one of the loudest proponents of it, going back a couple of years as this was being bandied about. And a number of his players, including McNamara, he's got to deal with the Brady brand that just came out, which ties back to the Simpsons because Brady was wearing a sweatshirt that said Brady on it. Mm-hmm. All those years ago on a Simpsons mm-hmm. episode, which is just really strange how this all works together. Boosters, like there's money. There's a huge alumni base to tap into. I don't think there's necessarily the fear of all the change. I could see it for a Mike Krzyzewski. I could see it for some other guys where, you know, there's just a difference. For Brian Kelly, I don't know what the appeal was to go and actually play a real schedule for a full season. See what I did there, Notre Dame fans, at Swollen Dome. Come on. But the idea, you know, that, you know, he's this highly coveted guy in the NFL this time around is curious, right? Because isn't he supposed to be everybody's favorite in Chicago? Isn't that what everybody said? You hear about anything about him interviewing with the Bears? Nope. Not a one, right? That was supposed to be the slam dunk interview, top of the line, top of the list. Nope. So contract details, I suspect we get something in short order, some leak about dollars and cents for Harbaugh. Remember, he is signed through 2025 as it stands. So while there's, yes, let's put him in the range, given all the funny money going around to the other coaches for prestige and honor and saving face or whatever term you want to use. Yeah, there's some of that there. But I don't think he runs away from the challenges because he's still the guy in charge. Right, he's still the guy that makes this go. Go to the NFL, even in the most dysfunctional of worlds, you still have a guy claiming to be GM. Now, we saw that that didn't work with the Las Vegas Raiders and that Gruden was hired. Then they bring in Mike Mayock, who I think got screwed in this whole process. I don't know that Davis wants to do it again, but Michigan, yeah, part of the fan base may say, eh, so be it. But the old, who are you going to find that's better? Who's jumping in to that slot that's a proven commodity? That's the $100 million question.
No, I get it, but here's the thing, Mike, is that seeing Michigan do business for the past 20-some-odd years, they don't do it like everybody else. Michigan's not going to come up with, oh, we got to keep Harbaugh. Let's find $115 million to do it. He took a pay cut last year. Michigan's not the kind of school that says, all right, anything we can to keep our football coach. They've been at odds with the different coaches they've had going back to Lloyd Carr. And why doesn't Michigan treat their coaches the way they should? They just don't. It's just not how they do. They do it differently. And if they really wanted to keep Harbaugh and they were worried that he was going to leave, they would have come up with an offer already that would have said, here you go, Jim. Here's $120 million for next stay.
Just because they didn't leak it to Bruce Feldman doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
There would be stories. We would know that. They wouldn't be negotiating in secret. We knew about Mel Tucker 8 seconds after the offer went out. Mel Tucker's this guy. We would have known that. Maybe not the numbers, but it would have been Michigan's got a big offer on the table for Harbaugh. But we haven't. And that would be sent. And there's been time because this NFL Harbaugh story came out right after the semifinal game. So Michigan's had 2.5 weeks to 3 weeks to say, all right, let's come up with money for Harbaugh. The fact that they haven't tells me they are comfortable letting him go. I mean, they've never really embraced him. The fan base has never embraced him coming back. It's just been weird.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing, given all the roses and love thrown at his feet from the khaki days first arriving on campus to, you know, what he did this year.
I'm telling you, that's just
you and I must have been watching two very different seasons and read a lot of different articles. I'd love like you to cite your sources.
I know my sources. How
other than your people in Detroit who just generally hate people anyway?
Right? Yeah. You know, they like Matthew Stafford. They're all happy for him. They're happy as hell for him.
Well, because they don't have to worry about whether he wins or loses anymore. But go back to Brady Hoke. He had 1 year. They go to the Sugar Bowl and win. Otherwise, 8-5, 7-6, 5-7. Rich Rodriguez. We know that was an unmitigated disaster. Lloyd Carr was there forever, right?
And they still pushed him out.
Well,
they
sure.
They won a national title for the first time in 50 years. They still pushed him out. This is how
you only get so many years with the national title before it loses its luster, man. You don't get a lifetime contract.
The first one in 50 years.
That's fine.
Since Tom Harmon was playing for Michigan.
I know, but go back and...
No,
but that's the point of also remembering who the hell you are and not be in this delusions.
No, that's how they do it,
buddy. Of grandeur.
They would have given him... They would have given a contract extension him right away. You watch what they did with Mel Tucker, how fast it came for USC and LSU. They would have done it already if they were really going to do it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Mike check. Hey. Mike check. Hey.
If you want exclusive insight from the biggest names in the sports game, what's good? This is national champion and former pro baller Chris Johnson. And let me tell you a little bit about my new series, KJ Live.
KJ Live is the only show featuring me going one-on-one with the brightest basketball minds on the planet to get the real.
And when I say real, I mean that real. I got legendary Hall of Famers, elite coaches, and the top basketball insiders bringing you a unique perspective on all things hoops culture that you will not find anywhere else.
To make your next move your best move.
And tap in with me on KJ Live, wherever you get your podcast from.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Closing in on the end of the third quarter, Frank Vogel watch. Things get a little closer for the Lakers and the Pacers. Here comes Indiana. 80-76. Lakers with the lead now. Final minute of the third quarter. LeBron James having a big night for the Lakers. He's got 21, 8, and 4. Meanwhile, Melo with 14 off the bench. But the Lakers blow this game with the Pacers. Another home game. They fall under 500 again. This might be the game for Frank Vogel. Look, we talked about it last night. The next time the Lakers have a listless, uninspired night where they play terribly and it's like the Nuggets loss from a couple of nights ago, that's when Frank Vogel's going to get fired. But I mean, so far tonight, they've played well. They've played with energy. LeBron James is playing fantastic. He had a dunk on an alley-oop. You say to yourself, oh my God, this guy's been in the league 19 years. He had that kind of play. It was something from him. So far, it looks like they're playing inspired for Frank Vogel, but in the end, if they wind up falling short and they lose by a bunch, that might not be enough to help them. But I liked at least the fact it looks like the Lakers are playing hard for him, where it's not, hey, we need a change and we're going to go through the motions and be listless, and the change is going to come at some point.
Well, add to the fact you're playing a team that's 14 games under 500. You want to throw that one in while we're at it? Because, you know, just to add some...
I just thought that was piling on. I just thought that would be piling on.
We got to add the extra specificity to it when it comes to not only, you know, in a big fight at home, it's against a terrible team. Right? Indiana, this is not your Reggie Miller Indiana Pacers. This is not a Pacers team that's been at least good for a fight most years, right? They're at least usually competitive. Right now, they're down 3-17 away from home. Should I add any more specificity to it, or do you get the point? Unfortunately for Frank Vogel, it seems determined that he will at some point be the fall guy, right? The old Chris Carter quote from years ago. There's no logic to it. He didn't build the team. And if you're going to say, well, he didn't maximize, well, LeBron James has given you everything you got. And you got guys that are having awful games once again. Russell Westbrook is, let's see, last look. Yeah, he's up to 4-15. So that's good. That means he's hit one of his last five shots because he was 3-10 last I looked at him. Good minus 12 on the night. But only one turnover. So I guess that's good. Are you supposed to take some solace in that? I don't know. But the old, hey, do something even if it's wrong, can sometimes show you're kind of showing yourself as an organization where you're at.
Dude,
someone's got to be to blame.
Dude, Linda Rambis has been talking to Jeannie for the last 3 weeks. You know, Kurt might be, you know, I'm not saying Frank is, but, you know, there's lots of guys out there, but, you know, maybe Kurt. I mean, there's other guys you'd want to talk to, sure, but, you know, Kurt would probably be. You should probably talk to Kurt. Yeah, I would talk to Kurt. And then, like, every day it's been a little bit of Kurt Rambis. So at some point, Jeannie Buss is going, okay, I guess I got to talk to Kurt Rambis about this. And Linda Rambis is going, see, I did it.
See, in Kurt, the vernacular of in the vernacular of Seinfeld, do you think they would call him a lurker, where he's just kind of around? Oh, my ears are burning. They're talking about potential changes. Keep walking past the door,
or no? He might be more of a sidler than a lurker.
Oh, there
he
you
might
go.
Be, yeah, he's more of a sidler, because the lurker would be now. Sidler would be, hey, I'm right here. Like, you know, you got to be there before everybody else. Hey, I'm right here. Oh, you just sidled right up to me there.
Linda and Jeannie go out for lunch, and there he is sitting. I would say he was having a glasses and a mustache, but he's already got that. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's just got a nice jaunty hat on, and he's kind of hiding over in the corner just listening. He's sending Linda wearing a wire to lunch. I want to hear all of it, because it's not just going to be about what you guys are doing. I want to know what you're talking about as far as the business of the Lakers.
You're wearing a wire to lunch. Shh, be quiet. He's out in a truck outside.
What if she suspects something?
He's in like an AM 570 Lakers street truck, you know, that's out there. Oh, no, we're just.
Oh, no, she's on to us. Sorry, Law and Order reruns were playing earlier. And it's actually a flower truck.
No, it's our PR team. They're handing out stuff.
The street team. Meanwhile, come get bumper stickers.
It's them inside listening to everything else. So again, Lakers lead the Pacers 80-76 with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. We'll have more on this game. But earlier tonight, we talked to Eric Dickerson, Pro Football Hall of Famer, who's got a new book out today. You can get it at Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's called Watch My Smoke. And there are very few better storytellers than Eric Dickerson. The last time he came on our show was 3 years ago, when he had gotten relieved of his duties as an ambassador for the Rams. Jeff Fisher was banning him from the sidelines, and Eric Dickerson came on our show, told us that Jeff Fisher had banned him. It turned into a huge story. I mean, tremendous story. We were getting calls all the next day. Can we run your sound? Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? It was really phenomenal to see that attention. And 2 days after that, Jeff Fisher got fired. That was it. Oh, you can't do that to a gold jacket. And Jeff Fisher was out. So now here are the Rams. They went to a Super Bowl. Now they're in the playoffs again after another win. And it's really thanks to us, because Dickerson came on our show and said, hey, Jeff Fisher banned me from the sideline. He wouldn't give me tickets at Disneyland. All of these things, right? So, hey, we did some things. We are affecting the course of the National Football League. Now, it's stories like this that Eric Dickerson has coming up, and you're going to hear his interview in its entirety next hour on the show. He told us that I think we're in the book with the Jeff Fisher stuff. But the best story that he told us on the air tonight was the time he went into then Rams general manager John Shaw's office looking for a contract extension. He felt he had outperformed his contract. He had just led the NFL in rushing again, had a 2,000-yard season, had an 1,800-yard season. And listen to what happened when he went in the GM's office and asked to redo his contract.
And I'll tell you one story right quick that when I knew it was going to break down bad with the Rams, I went to visit John Shaw. I went to set a meeting up with the general manager, John Shaw's general manager. It took me a month to get this meeting with him. Now, can you imagine one of the star players, say, for the Lakers or Patrick Mahomes, anyone having it took a month to set up a meeting with the general manager? It would take 5 minutes right now. So it took me a month to set up a meeting with him. I go to a meeting, we meet him, and we talk, and I said, John, I said, man, my contract, I've outplayed this, it's a bad contract. And he said, Eric, he said, you have a contract, but I've outplayed it. And he said, I want to get paid fairly like a quarterback. And he said, well, Eric, you got to prove yourself. Now think about it, I'd already rushed the 2,000 yards before. This is my fourth year, I just rushed the 1,821 yards. I said, well, John, I led the league in rushing last year. He said, no, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. No, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. I said, 1,821, 14 touchdowns. He said, Walter Payton. I said, no, he didn't. I did. So he says, let me get the book and look at it.
Oh, my God.
Said, oh, you did. Oh, you did. And I was so pissed. I was so pissed. I'm like, come on, man. Then I said, tell you what. Now, think about it. I said, look. I said, I'm willing to play for my contract. I said, now, not 1,000 yards. I said, if I have over 1,500 yards, I said, 1,500, you pay me with Marino and Elway gets $1.5 million. I'm making $275 at that time. $275. They're making $1 million. I said, pay me like them, and we can have a deal. He said, Eric, I said, if I have 1,500 yards or more, you pay back the quarterback. He said, no, we're not going to do that. So at that point, yeah, I just knew it was a deal that just wasn't going to happen. And it just went south at that point, you know. And I never wanted to be the Ram. I always wanted to be a Ram forever, but it didn't work out like that.
Can you imagine that? Listen, I want to be paid like, well, you got to prove yourself. Prove yourself. It's that 2,000-yard season and 1,800-yard season. I just led the league in rushing. What kind of conversation can you imagine going on when you hear the GM say, no, you didn't lead the league in rushing, Walter Payton did? First of all, what does it matter if Dickerson ran for 1,800 yards, right? Doesn't matter. No, Walter Payton did. No, that was me. No, it was Walter Payton. No, it was me. And then he gets up to go look it up in a book. I mean, this is in the, you know, you're talking about this is like 1990, and he wound up leaving the Rams and going to the Colts for the next stop in his career. But can you imagine the GM just in that meeting, you're talking about a contract, he just, oh, no, I got to get up and look this up because I don't believe you? If I'm Dickerson, I got to sit back and go, what the hell kind of team is this? What kind of guy is this that's going to stop the meeting because he doesn't believe me when I say I led the league in rushing? And I'm going to go look it up in a book. I got an almanac behind me. I got the Biff Tannen almanac. I can look it up and see who led the league in rushing. Oh, it did happen to be you, Eric Dickerson. That was a meeting. That was a meeting that the best running back in the NFL had with his general manager.
It's really amazing to me on 100 levels. I mean, look at his first 2 years. 2,200 yards total, 2,200 yards the next year, 32 touchdowns on the ground. Oh, by the way, he caught 51 passes as a rookie as well. So he had that and another two touchdowns. So he got to 20 as a rookie. His down year was 1,234 yards. I like that. 1, 2, 3, 4. With 12 touchdowns his third year. And then comes back with the 18-21. 404 rushing attempts. Are you kidding me? 404. And he goes for 18-21 and 11 touchdowns. But, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I can't wait to read all the other stories about that time in the book because, you know, a lot of that fight, you know, is an inspiration to what's happened, you know, in the 25 to 30 years since. And players watching him stand up saying, no, screw this. Look at what I'm doing. Look at what I mean to your team and holding, you know, them to the fire. And you know me, I'm always you can bet on yourself, and I applaud guys that do. Recognize your situation, and, you know, we do it all the time where it's like, all right, you can understand where maybe you don't have the leverage that someone in your camp may think you do, but I'm always going to respect someone, whatever your profession, trying to figure out what you think you deserve and raise in your hand, and that's what he did all these years later. But to have to go and have a meeting like that and wait a month to do it? Are you kidding me?
No.
That is just next-level stuff. And here, let me go get the book. Like,
yeah,
you don't know that?
Yeah.
You're not planning to celebrate that already for the third time in 4 years? He's led the league in rushing, right? Third time he's gone over 1,800 yards. And money aside, but to play, I really just hope they're playing dumb. It's like, no, you didn't. No, really. You couldn't have. It's just so insulting on a million levels. You're so apprised and in tune. And what do we talk about all the GMs now? They know every which way. They know what you had between the A gap, the B gap, you know, what you had after the second quarter, what you ate for breakfast that morning, and how it fueled you. I mean, all of those things. They have all of that in the analytics. So to have a front office and an ownership that we don't know what you did. We didn't know that you were first. Come on, they're hanging banners in places for less.
It baffles me that this is the way things used to be run in the NFL, and especially when you're talking about your star player. But this is also back, and this is a thing, is that players never had the leverage a long time ago. Even if you're a star. I mean, you think about now, this is like Derrick Henry saying, hey, I've outperformed my contract, and I can't get a meeting with my GM for a month, and then saying, I led the NFL in rushing last year, and they're saying, no, it was Ezekiel Elliott. No, it was me. I said, no, it was Ezekiel Elliott. No, I'm going to go look it up. I mean, that wouldn't happen now because players have so much more power.
Well,
and that's what I think players like Eric Dickerson and players who played a long time ago, this is what they look back at and get the most upset about. Not the fact about, oh, you know, guys now make so much money, because that's just how it goes in life, is that, you know, everybody goes on and you make more money in sports. That's how it works. But I guarantee you they would say, I wish I had the power that the players have nowadays, because it wasn't a players' league back then, and it's every league is a players' league now.
Well, let me point that, I know we need to get to Dave here in a sec. The idea that as a player, you've got also so many other opportunities to say your piece. Not that you couldn't try, but you know, back in his playing days, access could still be restricted, right? If the team and the GM and folks didn't want you around, you weren't getting locker room access. You weren't getting access to players on off days. And maybe you'd get something behind the scenes, or you'd establish enough of a relationship with a player that you'd get the one-off. But for the most part, you still had a pretty controlled narrative of what was going on. So it was pretty easy to paint a guy like that as a malcontent, right? And take Eric Dickerson saying, well, he's making whatever he said, right? $275,000. Like, well, he's making $275,000. It's a quarter of, you know, and look at the quarterbacks, the most important position, blah, blah, blah. Even though back then, if you had a running back like him, you were in pretty good shape, right? You were still in a run-first NFL, starting to shift there with Marino and Elway and all those guys coming in, but certainly hadn't done to that level. But I think part of it is you just didn't have the outlets, and it was very easy for a team to construct a narrative to kind of get the fans to, while they may have loved you on the field, they would still, and we still see it today, right? Even with all the different access points and information that go on, to where it's a, you know, being ungrateful and, you know, a malcontent is the term we hear all the time, you know, when it comes to contracts and how guys get painted into a corner. Think about all the quarterbacks that get paid. It's not their fault they got paid. It's like when you get drafted first overall, yes, more expectations go with it, but you didn't force anybody's hand to draft you. But narratives are what they are.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Oh!
Tonight's show brought to you by one of our favorite cities, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Every game, match, race, and competition, it is always on. No one does sports like Vegas, and the excitement is endless. So make sure to plan your trip today at visitlasvegas.com. Well, coming up in 10 minutes, the Frank Vogel Watch. Wow, 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 wow. This could wind up being the last night of Frank Vogelwatch, because the Lakers are in the process of getting steamrolled in the fourth quarter against the Pacers, 14 games under 500, and the Pacers lead this game over the Lakers. I mean, it would be some kind of crazy comeback in the final minute 30 to make it happen, because the Lakers are down 109-98 with a minute 30 left to go. LeVert's got 28. Sabonis has 20 and 11 rebounds and 10 assists. He's got a triple-double. This has not gone at all in the way of Frank Vogel. But, again, still a bit of time left in this. We'll keep you updated on it in a few minutes and then really get to Frank Vogel watch. But earlier today, Baker Mayfield, you know, sometimes when players say things, they just sound like they're a high school kid and they're making excuses because they think what I can say flies. Baker Mayfield says he's on track to, quote, getting back to my true self after he underwent surgery Wednesday to repair a torn labrum in his non-throwing shoulder, right? Surgery went great, was a complete success, he said in a video he put on social media. Now it's on the road to recovery. It's one of those steps to get back to my true self. Baker Mayfield has realized that I have to lean into the I was really injured angle if he's going to keep the needle moving towards him to continue on as a starting quarterback for the Browns, if he's going to continue to win the fans over, but more importantly, his teammates and the team. Boy, I was really hurt. Oh, I wasn't my true self last year. I can be my true self now. Which, honestly, if he was really hurt, he wouldn't have been playing. I'm not saying he wasn't hurt, but if he was really hurt, he wouldn't have played. Guys play with injuries all year long. If he was really hurt, he wouldn't have played. Mayfield now understands I got to lean into that excuse that I really wasn't healthy. Because that's the only way where people are going to, that need to believe in me, to give me this starting job one more year are going to believe in me. Because the best he has to start, the best chance he has is if Cleveland decides, okay, we'll do it one more year with UNC. Anywhere else, he's fighting for a job and maybe he's a backup. So he's leaning into this excuse, but it's like a high school excuse. Oh, my true self. What even? Like something that sounds good when you say it to your high school buddies. You go, yeah, I can use that excuse and people are going to fly. No, I'm sorry. A lot of people, that's not going to fly. You were bad. You were bad this year. You've not been a franchise quarterback. I thought you were on the way to it. You're not. And now it's, oh, no, but the injuries kept me from playing well. I want people to know that.
Yeah, well, you're going to get coming out of surgery, you know, you're going to say some things. That's where they always warn you. Be careful about putting a camera on you too fast. I remember I had to have some surgery a while back, and they're like, yeah, don't let him do or really talk or sign anything of any import for about 48 hours because you're going to make some decisions. In this case, yeah, you want to spin it as best you can, especially when you've been taking a bunch of body blows the final 6-8 weeks of the season and going into the offseason, right? All the questions of whether you should remain the guy and your value and how great are you, you know, partially injured compared to Case Keenum. All of that and then some, and people jumping off. And I can only imagine nationally it's one thing because he's one of many, many, many stories. Imagine locally in Cleveland, that's all they talk about all day, right? I mean, that's it. And Darius Garland, I guess.
Yeah, so true. But mostly Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
It's mostly.
So, yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to come out swinging. I was hurt.
What excuses those are, man. Hey, speaking of excuses, for one big-time NBA head coach, a title may not be enough. He may be out. That's next, Fox.